sunshine, a little over, liver, liver, leave us.
Hello, happy Tuesday, and thanks for tuning in to As the Worm Turns. This is DJ Peggy Soup filling in for the lovely Miss Jill Spears while she's on sabbatical. You're listening to Paonia KBNF 90.9 and Montrose KVMT 89.1. This is a call-in show, so please feel free to do so at 527-4868 or 866-KBNF now. As I said, I'm Peggy Soup, and Lance is with me, and we are just going to have such a good time because we are joined here with Ron Godin, and he just got back from New Mexico from an organic conference, and so we're going to be talking about soil fertility.
Yeah.
Very excited about it.
It is. It's time to start thinking about it. Not doing anything yet. It's a bit early.
I made compost today.
What? I did too by pulling old tomato plants that I didn't. Well, it's beginning compost. It's
beginning. But I just want to mention the inspiration for asking Ron this spring was a couple of weeks ago. I was listening to New Dimensions, and they had a woman talking about, she had just written a book on urban homesteading. And one of the comments she made was that no civilization has ever survived its own soil depletion.
And here we are.
Fertility and new garden season, so let's go for it.
Right. And so soil amendments to increase soil fertility. I know that it's vastly different from area to area in the valley. Everything from really light and lofty that doesn't really hold any roots and they just all wash away to the very clay impacted. And I know that my new challenge is raised beds this year.
Pretty much for any farming system that you have, whether it's a garden or a farm, small farm, bigger farm, we want to increase and maintain the organic matter. And that was a big emphasis at the New Mexico Organic Conference this year is cover crops for increasing fertility and increasing organic matter without tilling. And that's the what we're trying to emphasize now in the last few years is to the no-till part of it. Because when you till, you introduce a lot of oxygen into the system and it burns up your organic matter.
Right.
We don't produce a lot to start with. And with the heat we have and the dryness, it burns it up quite quickly. So we're starting to get into doing cover crops, even if it's just on part of your garden and part of your planting land, to add, they're talking anywhere between 8 and 15 different species of cover crops planted at the same time.
Oh, wow.
The idea is to plant all these cover crops to for the roots to take up as many soil niches as possible. You want to fill the soil with roots. And then when it's time, when you decide it's time to either cut or mow the cover crop and lay it down for mulch, then the roots become organic matter in the soil and increase the organic matter of the soil without tilling. So that's the new emphasis we're going on, and it seems to be working in lots and lots of areas. And quite a few people have done it in this area, mostly down in the Olathe area, but we're starting to see more and more cover crops around here for fertility.
So now when, for the backyard gardener, I'm a spokeswoman for the little space. So when you would mow the cover crop, especially if you're having that piece of lawn that's been just abandoned for so long, and you do plant cover crops, when you do mow it, do you just leave that veg matter on top?
Yeah, you just leave it on top. And depending on what you need for your following crop. That's why with organic matter or with organic farming, you have to plan ahead a bit. Because if you're going to have veggies, you probably wanted to have a cover crop planted last fall so it lasts through the winter, and then you can cut it and leave it on the top. Now, if you cut it young when it's leafy, then you're going to get a lot of nutrients released quickly. If you let it go a bit longer till it gets more stemmy, you're going to get less nutrients quickly, but it's going to be more long-term. It takes a while for the stems to break down and get into the soil. So depending on where your garden is up to, if you're just starting a new one, you probably want some of both. quite a bit of stem, so it builds that long-term organic matter in the soil, and then some leaf. So that's why the multiple species cover crop. So you get some leaf and some quick.
I was just wondering, are these, when you say 8 to 12 varieties, are some annuals, some perennials?
They're all annuals.
They're all annuals.
So then when you cut the tops, the roots will die and die. Turn into organic matter in the soil.
Yeah, and when the roots decompose, the air and water and soil life can move through this.
Correct. Yep. Mm-hmm. Yep. It's pretty amazing. But you're right. If most of these civilizations didn't make it, they just basically farm their land to nothing, to death.
Yeah. And then the supply lines get really long, and that's what gets weakened.
And so that's what we're trying to do, is help people keep the fertility of their soil by doing this. You can also add different types of organic matter. Mm-hmm. Residues, like you mentioned, your tomatoes from last year is a good one. Uh-huh. Compost is a good one, as long as you don't overdo it. You have to be careful on the salinity part of it. Or manures are also really good. And what we also do, if you can, is the joke is, the sure way to make it rain is to cut hay. So when we cut hay, it rains, and so most hay farmers have moldy hay that they can't sell. It's stacked in a corner of the property someplace, and they're happy to get rid of it for a buck a bale or whatever is agreed on, and then you can spread that and use that for mulch on top. And when it breaks down, it has a lot of good fertility to the soil as mulch, so the soil doesn't blow away and keeps the moisture in.
Yeah.
And the soil, like that idea.
Yeah, the soil life really likes that stuff.
Especially in the winter. Well, quite a few folks, they'll put like a half a bale on top of their whole garden in the fall. And so it keeps the warmth in, so the soil and the bugs in the soil keep working. Mm-hmm. They're pretty slow, but they still work all winter long.
I'm pretty slow all winter long, too. So
am I. So it works.
Wow. Uh-huh.
So what – I know there are so many cover crops. What would be your favorite – cover crops?
There's some rules that you need to follow if you're going to do this.
Right, because there's like spring, summer,
exactly,
fall, right?
There's what they do is they break it down into five categories: warm season broadleaves, cool season broadleaves, warm season grasses, cool season grasses, and then legumes is its own category. And the rule is that you have to have at least one from each category, and you got to have a minimum of 8 different species, and you plant them all at the same time. Mm-hmm. They'll all germinate and grow. Some will grow a little bit better than others, but if you want to have a long-term cover crop, like let's say you're doing a spring lettuce, and then in the summer you got time to cover crop, and then you're going to do brassicas in the fall, so you have all summer, so you can plant as soon as your lettuces are done, and the cools and the warms will both germinate and go through the whole season and do well. Then when you cut them down, you've got a little bit of everything plus more organic matter in the soil. It's quite fascinating, the results that they're seeing with all these different species planted at the same time.
That's very interesting. I haven't, I've only played with like a vetch or clover over large areas that you're not going to use right now, and then you flip that.
Like vetch in combo with winter rye or winter wheat works real good, because the vetch will crawl up to the stems of the grasses in the spring. But by the time you cut it and let it break down a bit before you plant the next crop, you're definitely into summer. So you're not doing a spring crop by planting those. Other stuff, it depends. If you have like if you have a plow pan, like we were speaking about earlier, or some kind of hard pan below, we're starting to grow what they call tillage radishes, which is basically is just a daikon radish, but it can just plow right through that plow pan. And I've seen pictures of some 3 feet long that have gone through plow pans and busted up these pans. So you can use some of these cover crops to do your sort of tillage for you, to break up these pans without having to till.
That's amazing.
Yeah. Yeah, well, I planted winter rye in two different spots last fall, and they're one's for the corn patch and one's for the squash patch. So it's really, it'll get all grown and tilled in and broken down way before I actually plant.
Right.
You know, and I think we talked once about when you were here last year about rye, and you can mow that down and plant right in it, and it's such a good weed suppressor.
It is, but you have to transplant into it.
Yeah, you have to transplant
you
into it.
You can't seed into the rye because there's chemicals, the technical term, and you got to remember that science is the art of making simple things complicated. So we call these chemicals allelopathic chemicals, but basically they're just germination inhibitors. And there's quite a bit in the rye roots and also in the rye stems. So once you mow it, you get about a month or so of weed germination suppressor. It suppresses germination of seeds, but it also suppresses your veggie seeds.
Yeah, especially so the small seeds.
So you have to transplant into it if you want to crop right away.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So for the raised beds, because I know that I've seen many people, again, this is my first year of like planting a second season in a row in raised beds. How would you, because you can't really do a crop covering, can you, in a raised bed?
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's no reason why not.
And then just like cut it down.
It's another plant. You can take your mower. Mm-hmm. I was speaking with one of the guys at the organic conference, and he said he's fallen in love with his mower.
Mowers are really good. I've mowed. That's what I'll do with my cover crop before I till it in. I'll mow it.
And then it breaks down real quickly and releases those.
And if you have hedging shears. Mm-hmm. And if these are off raised beds that are cement blocks, then you can't get a mower up there.
Right, no.
Hedging shears work really good.
Excellent.
You know, and it's a small enough space and that you could get
it
done.
That's a good
idea. Yeah.
Some shears, just like privet shears.
Yep, I have the exact shears in mind. I know exactly what I'm doing there.
Okay.
So you can do it in any kind of space. You can plant it as long as you can get up there, obviously, and mow it or cut it down.
Mm-hmm.
But even a sickle on a small, you know, a table size raised bed, you can just whack it with a sickle.
Now it makes me want to get a sickle again. I'm so excited. And so, Lance, you do some shallow tilling.
Some shallow tilling, yes. My tilling is strictly soil prep for the seedbed. It's only about 3 inches.
See, that's what's very important for me to impress upon people when you say before tilling that you're just talking 3 inches. You're not talking disking.
I stopped deep tilling. You know, the one thing that I haven't worked out is I started hand turning my entire garden, just a shovelful. And then when I make the beds, before I make the beds in the spring, I use that broad fork.
Mm-hmm.
And so that goes down to 11, 12 inches. And then I make the beds after that.
And that's just a wiggling. That's just a big, giant fork that you stick in the ground and you wiggle back and forth.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I have two of them. One's about 18 inches, 2 feet wide. Another one's about 3 feet wide.
So you make holes in the soil, and then you come back with compost and sort of fill them up, fill the holes up with compost. So it gets your deep fertility.
But I do have
time without.
Yeah. I have two other cover crops in the middle of the summer, like if I take the buckwheat out or where, like the winter rye or winter wheat, the winter grains, after they come out, if I don't want to plant something, I'll plant buckwheat there. And then I'll turn again, and then I'll do a fall field pea.
Oh.
Yeah, I'll plant that, and that grows, and a hard frost will kill it.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, the hard
frost. But then your ground's covered for the winter.
Yeah, just laying
there. The idea is the new kind of mantra is 100% cover 100% of the time. It's to have something on the soil all the time so it doesn't blow, it doesn't erode, and plus the keep it covered with mulch especially helps keep the moisture as dry as it is here in the summertime or any time to help keep as much moisture as possible. It helps you keep as much organic matter as possible, which is the real tough thing to do around in the desert.
Right.
Here's something. You say organic matter, and here's one I wish people would use less of is wood chips. So could you explain?
Yes.
Wood chips.
I don't recommend wood chips at all.
I don't either.
Unless there's always an exception to the rule. If you have a heavy, heavy clay soil that hasn't been worked in a long time and you want to lighten it up a bit, wood chips may work, but you have to add nitrogen with it. What happens with wood chips is that they're all carbon, and the microbes in the soil want carbon. Give me that carbon.
Yeah.
But in order for them to get at the carbon that's in the wood chips, for about every 20 pounds of wood chips, they need 1 pound of nitrogen, which is not in the wood chips. So if there's no nitrogen in the wood chips, they're going to take it out of your garden. And that's going to leave your garden starved for nitrogen. So you shouldn't add wood chips to the garden. You have to be careful about what you add, but you can look it up online on the internet. They show carbon-nitrogen ratios for most anything you can add to the garden. And you shouldn't go below 30 to 1 or 20 to 1 is even better.
Wood chips, wood chips are, I think, 400 to 1.
Yeah, like sawdust. It's about 400 to 1.
So this is why we're talking.
And that's why they don't break down so fast. Yeah. And they're just big chunks.
Big chunks of wood.
And if you want,
it's going to eat up all your nitrogen.
Yeah, at least for about 3 or 4 years.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay. And so does that so people would use wood chips as far as like landscaping?
Well, they can. I've seen it in pathways.
Uh-huh.
And where I have used it, but not in the garden, is dry land planting of trees. Mm-hmm. And I put it six inches deep and 12 feet of diameter circle around them. You know.
And that works as long as you, if you have irrigation.
Yeah.
Okay.
Because if it dries out, we found that when we did the same thing at the research station, looking at
that.
Fruit trees. And 1 year we had a pretty bad drought. And then we were able to get more water because it started raining again. But what happened is during the drought, the chips dried out so much that when it rained, none of that rain got to the plants. None of it got in the soil.
Wow.
So it's something you have to be careful about.
So ease
about.
Up on the wood chips.
Yeah, not in the garden
not
whatsoever.
In the garden.
No,
okay.
Not in the garden at
and
all.
And so what kind of nitrogen, let's say somebody already, like myself, inherited a place that has wood chips, very labor intensive to remove them.
Mm-hmm.
And then what, you don't know what to do with them once you remove them, besides have a big wood chip pile in the corner.
Use them on the paths between your rows of veggies. You can do that. And they'll slowly break down on the surface. It's not really bad on the surface. It's when you start putting them in the soil that it gets really bad.
Do you have any perennials?
I do.
But mulch the perennials with them.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, just leave it right on top of the ground.
Just leave it on the surface.
And if you want to mulch a little bit more, you can throw your compost and manure right on top of that.
Okay.
And it will.
All right.
That'll help break it down.
That's a good idea. Mm-hmm. They always end up with plenty of that.
If I had a yard with wood chips in it, being who I am, I would make a screen, and I would screen all that soil and get all the wood chips out.
Okay.
As simple as that.
Sure.
I'd put a screen on top of a wheelbarrow, and I would screen it out.
I've seen that done. I've actually helped to do that. Very labor intensive, but worth it in the outcome. So what kind of nitrogen would you add into that? Let's say somebody's not a real go-getter, and they're like, it's in there. I just need to add nitrogen.
Well, you need to add a lot of nitrogen. If you're not averse to using animal products, blood meal is about the best highest source of nitrogen that we have. Manure, fresh manure is better than composted. That has lots of nitrogen in it. Mm-hmm. If you can do it, it's best to put the nitrogen down and then put the wood chips back on top.
We have a caller. John from Montrose has a comment. Hello, John.
Yeah. Hello.
Hi.
Yeah, so I guess you guys are talking about long-term solutions to this problem. Our soils on the western slope are so poor, you have to either deep plow and get some of the natural ingredients back up into this mix, or very slowly apply. You can't be putting this hot stuff you guys are talking about on our soils. Maybe in your specific case, that's what it needs. But before you do anything, you need to have that tested and find out what you need, because you could burn some stuff forever with what you guys are talking about. You could go get chicken leavings and apply that all you want. You won't grow a pine tree.
Correct.
So
you're gonna go a little at a time.
I'll hang up now.
Thanks for calling, John. Thanks for your comments, John. Ron, so that's a good point, that you don't want to
put manure
right
onto the soil and try to plant into it.
Right.
Because there's a lot of nitrogen, but the part with manure that's not real good is the salinity in the manure, and that's what burns. That's what he's talking about.
Mm-hmm.
Manures have a lot of salts in them, just normally. The worst is steer manure, because it comes from a feedlot that also has the urine in it, which is even higher in salinity. So you start adding too much, and we've done it here before, trying to do organic with composts and manures, added too much on, and made the salinity in the soil go up, and it starts to harm the yields and the plants. And that's what he's talking about. When it's too hot, there's too much salinity mm-hmm. right away, unless it breaks down or unless you want to till it in, which I don't recommend, but you can use compost as much easier. It's not hot. It won't burn because mm-hmm. it's already been through this process once. But some people do their composting right in their garden.
Mm-hmm.
So they'll dig a small trench with a shovel and put all their kitchen scraps in there and bury it as they go along, and that'll compost itself right in your garden.
Oh, what a good idea. I'm like, that would have saved me tons of shoveling and
right, and making compost. It would make itself in the garden.
Yeah.
Excellent. Again, thank you, John from Montrose, for your comments and bringing up the point of especially fresh manure. Now, we've got several newer llama farms. And how long would you recommend, like if somebody were going to use manures, it's best to use aged manure and let it...
Or compost.
Or compost it.
And composting, according to the organic rules, is an active process,
mm-hmm.
which means you make a pile and it has to be minimum 4 feet by 4 feet by 4 feet to have enough mass to heat up to the temperatures that you want. And the rules say you have to heat it to 140 degrees for 3 days to kill pathogens and weed seeds. So that's how you would compost over the long. You can make them bigger, obviously, but that's mm-hmm. the minimum. And what you do, the best way to do it is to take a probe thermometer. You can buy them at the farm store and stick it in the compost pile and just watch it.
That's fun. What a great project.
Every day you
probe
check
thermometer.
Every day you check the thermometer, and as long as the temperature is going up, the pile is composting. When it stops going up, then you have to turn it and you make sure there's enough water, like a wet sponge. Mm-hmm. Because what stops the heat from going up is the microbes are running out. They're out of oxygen, so they just quit. So you turn the pile to add more oxygen, mm-hmm. and if it needs a little more water, put your probe thermometer back in and watch it. The same thing is going to happen again. You may need to turn it 2 or 3 times, but then mm-hmm. when you put the probe thermometer in and nothing, and then the heat doesn't go up, like the third or fourth time, it's ready.
Mm-hmm.
That's composting. If it gets too wet, you can get some bad smells. If there's too much or too little nitrogen, it won't get started. It won't get hot. But people can give me a call. I'll be glad to help them if they have problems composting or get them started. It's fairly simple if you follow those little rules of thumb.
Yeah, I was wondering did you talk at this seminar about inoculants for the soil, putting soil life back in?
Yep. We did. I spoke about mycorrhizae and also rhizobia. They're different. Sometimes people get them mixed up, so I'll explain it just a bit. Rhizobia is a bacteria that you plant or put on the seed with legumes. And what it is a symbiotic relationship with legume seeds like peas and beans, alfalfa, all kinds of legumes that we have, clovers. And so you put it on the seed when you plant it, and it's a bacteria, and when the roots start to grow, they'll hook onto the root, and they'll make a nodule. And what they're doing is taking atmospheric nitrogen and making fertilizer for you. They're turning it into organic nitrogen, and then the bugs in the soil will turn the organic nitrogen to mineral nitrogen that plants use. So that's rhizobia.
It's like magic.
It is. It is. Rhizobia is like it's free nitrogen, almost. And then the other one is mycorrhizae, which is a fungi. And you can also, they also sell it at the farm store. It goes a long way. I think they sell it in 2-pound tubs. But 1 cup in a 5-gallon bucket will inoculate a whole raised bed. I mean, I'm talking about a big mm-hmm. one, 20 by 20. And it doesn't take a lot, but it has to be in contact with a living root within 48 hours. So what you do is you let the plant start growing, and then I just water them with the mycorrhizae in the water.
Oh, okay.
So then it just gets down into the, gets right to the root, and it goes.
Instead of manure tea, you're putting this stuff on.
I'm putting mycorrhizae tea on it because what happens is the mycorrhizae hooks onto the root, and it can double the size of the root system, so it can take up more water, more nutrients for the plants.
Yum.
And you can see the difference in easily in a week or two if you do one bed with and one without. But it doesn't work with brassicas. It doesn't work.
Okay.
It doesn't like broccoli and cauliflower.
I don't
or
either.
Brussels. Or,
I know, we talked about that.
Or Brussels sprouts. Yeah. Anything that's a brassica, mustards, Brussels sprouts, it doesn't, kale, it won't do it. But all the other veggies, it works with. Okay. We don't
perfect.
Know why.
I have a bed for that. So don't use it on that bed.
Right, exactly.
Awesome.
But it works just amazing. They showed some pictures at the conference this year how the mycorrhizae, they were able to take the soil out away from the root system, and just it's just massive compared to one the same plant, the same everything, but no mycorrhizae.
Okay.
And they sell it, I think both places here in town do have it. And there's two different kinds, but don't have to worry about it.
Yeah, it's pretty common. I think most garden centers now have that kind of stuff.
And definitely if you're planting fruit trees, you make it, what we do is make a dip. Just make a 5-gallon bucket.
Where were you last year?
You can put it on now. You can put it on, as soon as it thaws. You can put it on your fruit trees. But we dip the roots.
On fruit trees.
On roots. Bare root trees, or put it in your transplants before you transplant them, and it just stays with it.
Uh-huh.
You have to re-inoculate every year. Where the rhizobia, you don't necessarily have to on the legumes. If you grow the same legume on the same place, like once every 4 years, let's say, in a rotation, you don't have to re-inoculate.
Yeah. Now, I've noticed over the years that my beans don't have that on the roots. But the clovers, the peas, the veg, they all do. And I've used that stuff, and the beans just don't.
Beans don't take a whole lot of nitrogen, and they're, what we see, they're not real good fixers of nitrogen, even with this bacteria.
Uh-huh.
And if you have a lot of nitrogen in your soil to start with, they're not going to make it. They're not going to have these nodules on the roots because it costs the plant energy to make these nodules. But if there's enough nitrogen in the soil already, they won't make nodules because that takes no energy to just take up the nitrogen that's already there.
There's different types of this bacteria for the different legumes.
Correct. Yep. There's a pea and bean. There's one for clover. There's a different one. You just, wherever you buy your seed, they'll have the different, they should have the different inoculant for what you're planting.
Or alfalfa.
Exactly.
Yeah.
You just have to make sure you have the right bacteria for the
right common
legume.
For beans and peas, that's the same
Both
one.
Both the same one, yep.
Yeah.
And vetches is another one.
So for your ground covering, an inoculant
for
the rhizobia for the legumes is
Absolutely.
Recommended.
Yeah, and get the right one.
Get the right one for the right
Because then you'll get a lot of nitrogen. Some of these summer clovers can fix just a boatload. Like Burseem clover over a summer cover can make 200 pounds of nitrogen an acre. So if you shrink it down, that's a lot of nitrogen for a veggie crop. So if you're doing a fall veggie, you plant Burseem clover along with some other stuff in the summer, that'll supply all your nitrogen that you need for your fall vegetable crop.
Wow.
So you, without me even asking, you answered my fruit tree on fruit trees, the mycorrhizome. Awesome. And I know that grapes. Now, would a inoculant work for that?
The mycorrhizae will, yes.
Okay.
Anything that's not a brassica, the mycorrhizae works in it.
Okay.
The beauty of mycorrhizae is that it spreads through a lot of area in the soil. And in our high pH soils, our plants have a hard time getting phosphorus because the phosphorus is tied up basically like a rock. It's rock phosphate. As soon as you put phosphorus in the soil, basically it almost right away turns into a rock. So they have a hard time getting this, but the mycorrhizae helps. Another trick is buckwheat is a good miner of phosphorus.
Mm-hmm.
And what we think is that around the roots of buckwheat, it's really highly acidic, so it's dissolving this rock phosphate just around the root, but then it brings it up into the top of the plant, and you have phosphorus on top, and there's also phosphorus in compost.
That's fantastic. We are, I'm so thrilled. Thank you, Ron Godin, for coming in. I have a notepad happening here.
It's full.
It's full.
Folks are welcome to call or email me. My phone number is 874-2197. I'm at the extension office in Delta, and my email is ron Godin, G-O-D-I-N, at Colo State. It's all one word, C-O-L-O-S-T-A-T-E.edu. Yeah. And folks are welcome to call me, email me with questions about fertility, farming, mm-hmm. growing, these kind of questions.
Yeah, and I'm actually going to be talking compost next week.
Oh, great.
That'd be fun to follow.
Excellent. So thank you for tuning in to As the Worm Turns. And thank you for listening this evening to Ron Godin on soil fertility. We wouldn't have plants without it. And tune in next week with Lance as he starts talking compost.
Compost.
Which is awesome. And I'm going to get a probe thermometer.
All right, sounds good. All right. Good
Thanks
night.
Thanks again. Happy planting.
Good night.
Gotta get that I love so low, little low and low.